All right, now we're going to find God in the engine room. Robert?
Okay, thanks. I have a confession to make. I'm a dreamer hopelessly trapped in the body of a scientist. So that's my myth. My talk today, because I am still hopelessly trapped in that body, we'll be looking in the engine room. Okay, that's what scientists do. The interesting thing that's happened, I'll be showing you some of the absolute, very latest research in dreams and how the brain deals with dreams, and then how that relates to how you work on your dreams. But the interesting thing that folks who are scientists find out lately is that the deeper you look into the science of dreaming and the brain, the more you find God looking back at you. And also, I find Jung looking back at me, because much of what has occurred lately with the research on brain science supports the theories of Jung.
Wow.
Of course, he wasn't around with the MRIs and things of that, but it's amazing how well it does. So I'm hoping to be that this is the kind of message you'll see in what I'm going to present. Before we start, I did want to announce something. There's this little sheet on your tables that I think Bob or somebody put out on Dreamtime Radio Show. Now, unfortunately, the show, it was actually a 28 series, and it was done like a course. The first 13 or 14 sessions were on general dream work, and we featured Bob and Jeremy Taylor in there and a number of dream work experts. And then the second part of the series was researchers. The series was on Voice America. Unfortunately, they just called me before I left here and said, well, you know, it's time to take this off. So I'm madly trying to get this put back on the ASD website. And you'll see at the top of this thing, www.asdreams.org. So probably in a month or two, we should have the whole series back up. And you can either go to my website, which is dreamscience.org, or asdreams.org, and you'll be able to click on a little yellow button there and get these radio shows. But it's got a tremendous number of experts on it. And I also wanted to announce that for those of you who haven't had enough of dreamers and dreaming at this conference, we've got a conference coming up. The International Association for the Study of Dreams has a conference coming up in Montreal in just a couple weeks. It's July 8th through 14th, and we have over 200 presenters at this conference. It's a 4.5-day conference, and it runs in tracks of research, clinical, cultural, extraordinary, psi dreams, lucid dreams, and the arts. So it's a little bit for everyone at the conference, and we ended up with a dream ball where everybody dresses up like their favorite dream character. So fun conference. If you really want to go to another one, I just wanted to let you know that that's available. Okay, so let's go, because I have probably 2 hours of material to cover in 40, 50 minutes. Take care. Looking at dreams, I wanted to start by saying a few things about how Jung looked at dreams. Now, he said an awful lot about dreams, but one of the things that he said about dreams is that they deal with the unfinished business of the day. They guide us by revealing and compensating for our misconceptions with the overall purpose of reestablishing the whole self. And it's this set of concepts that I wanted to relate to brain science as well as to working on dreams in this particular talk. Also, Sanford, who wrote the book Dreams, God's Forgotten Language, indicated that dreams come from a purposeful striving within, superior to our conscious aims. So the idea here is our dreams not only just come to us to reflect what's going on in our lives during the day, but somehow inside there is this force, this wisdom, this inner wisdom that comes to us that not only helps to reveal the shadow stuff inside of us, the stuff where we're failing, but also gives us a direction for us. Now, I wanted to give you a couple examples of dreams that relate to both Jung and Sanford's theories. This one supports Jung in that it indicates dreams deal with the unfinished business of the day by compensating for our misconceptions. Here is a misconception of an individual who had the following dream. The misconception was there is no way I can resurrect my old talents. They are gone forever. The fellow's getting on in his years, and he was now being asked to do something that he used to be able to do, but no longer felt that he could. And so in the following dream, he says, I was wandering through the desert and saw an old rusty car. I looked inside and found a man who was not moving. Of course, his sort of the side of himself that was no longer working, or he felt was no longer working. He said, I was going to give him up for dead, but my unknown companion, it was a shadow-like character behind him, urged me to wake the man. He argued with this shadow character for a while, but he reluctantly gave in and shook the man in the car. When he did, both the man and the car came to life, and the car began to transform into a newer car. So here was the shadow self taking on a role of guidance in the dream, basically compensating for this misconception and showing also the dreamer what could happen if they took action on that. Go ahead, try it. You know, you still got yourself within you. Okay? To support Sanford's contention that the dreams give us higher wisdom and guidance from within, here's another dream. The misconception in this case with the dreamer was truth lies with those in the know, the experts or the gurus in the field. And the problem that this dreamer was going through was they were reading all the books, they were going to all the conferences, they were doing all the exploring outside to try to find truth in their life. And the dream tried to correct for that. In the dream, the person dreamed, and this was a woman, she said, I wandered all night looking for the book of truth, which is what she had been doing all her life. Suddenly, I saw a wise old man sitting to the left who pointed down a descending wooden spiral staircase. He said, truth lies within. And as the dream continued, she went down this spiral staircase, and there was this pedestal with this golden book of truth. So now, if this sort of thing happens in our dreams, where does this wisdom come from? So as a scientist, let's check in the engine room. Interestingly enough, today we have technologies that allow us to, as we sleep and dream, look at exactly what parts of the brain light up, which parts of the brain are actively processing information in our dreams. So let's see what that says. Now, in the waking brain, this is just a picture of our brain. In the waking state, our brain is fully active, depending on what it is you're doing at any moment in time. And it consists of a conscious part of the brain, which is in yellow here, which in Jungian terms provides the functions of sensing the world outside, visual senses, all your other senses, as well as moving around in that world outside, and thinking, which is the frontal part of our brain. But the brain also consists of a very large, highly functional unconscious. Now, we've talked in terms of the conscious and the unconscious, but there actually really is a place. I mean, there is an unconscious part of the brain that does an awful lot of very important functions. And in Jungian terms, feeling comes from this. Now, you will be conscious of your feelings. That's because the unconscious projects into the conscious brain and allows you then to experience what's going on in the unconscious. And also, it contains a lot of the functions that Jung and others would normally attribute to intuition. That is, it stores memories, it stores experiences, things like that, in this unconscious part of the brain. And this brings up intuition whenever the conscious mind feels they need some guidance. Okay? Now, when we fall asleep, an interesting thing happens. A lot of the brain is off, okay? And when we dream, much of the brain comes back alive. And the parts that are in yellow here are the parts of the brain that are very active when you're dreaming. And notice, largely, the parts of the brain that were considered unconscious, the intuition and feeling activities of the brain are very alive, and the thinking and sensing are pretty much offline. There are a few parts of the sensing brain that are alive, which relate to the visual association cortex and things that allow you then to see your dreams, which are largely being generated in this unconscious portion of the brain. There's a couple parts of the brain that are pretty important here to seeing God in the engine room, or why we may see God in the engine room. And that is one portion in the center, which sometimes is even more active in dreaming than it is when we're awake, is the limbic region, which processes emotions. It deals with threats of the day, whether they're emotional threats or real threats to you. And it deals also with anomalies, things that don't quite fit this inner self, this belief we have, the ego belief of who we think we are. When the world out there disagrees with us, this part of the brain lights up and says, oops, we got a problem here, you know, let's go fix it. And also it deals with memory storage. Okay? And so our dreams tend to focus on the unfinished emotional events of the day, much like Jung said, the unfinished business of the day, and also things that threaten or don't fit our inner ego self. Again, supporting the theories of Jung. There's another part of the brain that lights up when we're dreaming that's also very important. It's called the anterior cingulate, and it deals with conflict resolution. It also is the point at where they find that as we do ego things, I things, that part of the brain lights up. So it's sort of a center for the internal I. So basically, this gives dreams sort of the aspect of mediating conflict and dealing with misconceptions, trying to bring in all the information that can be brought in to sort out the problem with a focus on basically restructuring the inner self. So again, supporting much of what Jung said with the actual science of dreaming. Now, interesting thing happens here. The dreaming brain mediates solutions, but because thinking and sensing is offline, it tends to mediate solutions with access to the more quiet sources. So normally that part of the brain, when you run into a problem, the anterior cingulate says, okay, guys, let's all get together and figure out how to solve it. So it goes out and looks for external solutions. It looks for internal thought solutions. You kind of think through the problems. It looks for feelings and emotions and whatnot. But when you're dreaming, all those external sources are gone. So now the dream looks for more of the internal information, the internal sources. So intuition and feeling light up, and the brain is quieted, so that more collective wisdom tends to flow into the mind to resolve solutions. This is where, as the psalm says, be still and know that I am God. Our brain is stilled. The thinking part of our brain is stilled in the dreaming state. So we now have more access to the God self and the message that comes through, the quieter message. And it's not filtered by our rational thinking. Now, what I'd like to do in this talk to kind of bring this home is we'll follow a dream through its process and see how some of this knowledge about the brain and knowledge about how Jung treated dreaming, because they seem, the science and Jung seems to now be fitting together, see how that works with actual dream work. This is a dream of a man, and I came from the corporate America, and this was a dream actually of an executive in corporate America. And even executives have God in their dreams. They're not excluded, you know. Okay. So this fellow, he dreamed the following dream. Now, I'm using Thomas Cole's A Voyage of Life picture here because it almost exactly duplicated the dream with a few little changes. So this was actually a picture of the guy's dream. He says, I'm a passenger in a boat aimlessly moving down a dark underground river with no control and no way out. I have a wise guiding voice behind me pointing out that no one is at the wheel. Okay? Now, in life, what had happened to this fella, he was in his, I think, his 50s, mid-50s or something like that. He says, he learned that his company is restructuring and fear my career is ending. I mean, we're talking about career ending here. He had other options for jobs, but it was career ending. What he really loved to do was ending. So it was a huge change to not only to his career, but to his own ego structure. Does this dream look like a picture of his feelings? I mean, doesn't that look like what he is feeling? And we'll find that as we work with our dreams, that they really truly are picture images of our feelings, the way we're feeling. So this was an appropriate picture for the way this poor fellow was feeling. And also, some of the researchers nowadays are realizing that emotion is the primary driving force behind the construction of the dream plot. This is Hobson, who's probably the leading dream researcher, does many of the brain scans and much of the brain science, discovering that it's feelings that tend to drive our dreams. Now, the other question to you, is there evidence of a deeper, higher wisdom presence in this dream. Does anyone see the higher wisdom present? Okay. Yeah, you can kind of poke through the picture. It was the little voice that, it was a hint. No one is at the wheel. It didn't say do something, like don't eat chicken or we're going to continue to give you bad movies in your, at night. It just suggested something. No one is at the wheel. A little hint. Okay, so if dreams have so much great information in them, then why, oh why, are they so hard to understand? Why didn't God just come out and tell us, like in the one case of, don't eat chicken or I'll give you all these movies in your, at night? Why didn't the dream just say something like that? Well, there's some really good reasons for that, and let's look back at the engine room and find out. Because this is where it helps us to understand God's forgotten language. The thing we have to realize is that even though, regardless of where the message comes from in our dreams, whether it's from God or it's from something we ate that day, it still is translated by our brains. A lot of folks may think that the brain has nothing to do with dreams. Well, the brain's in there somewhere, and it's basically the translator of the dream. So we see it in terms of how our brain can see dreams. So let's take this fellow's dream. His boss was telling him, hey, fella, your career may be over. We have a job for you, but not in what you like to do, or maybe the company's going to restructure and you're going to lose your job altogether. So there's a terrible threat to this fellow, I was told. Now, what happens when you're awake is you see that threat. It registers on your visual cortex, but it also registers in the part of your brain that deals with emotions. Okay. This is called the limbic system. And there's a little part of the limbic system called the amygdala that is the alarm system. It's a little face down there. It basically puts an emotional tag or motions. It takes and associates emotions with everything it sees. And it does that for a reason. It's part of the primitive brain that is there that if we see a car coming at us, we swerve out of the way long before we even think about it. So that's a safety valve. It's also there to bring attention to whatever is important to us in that environment. So it does a couple different functions. It does it automatically. It does it in the unconscious. So the other thing that's interesting about the brain is when the brain processes the actual event itself, when you see something, that something doesn't always just show up in your visual cortex and you see the whole thing. Different parts of what you see is processed in different parts of the brain. For instance, part of the picture is seen in the visual cortex, but other parts are like the spatial orientation where the important things where the hand and the desk and the person is processed in another part of the brain called the right inferior parietal cortex, which we'll see also processes metaphors, so we'll see why that's important in dreams in a minute. Color is processed in a different part of the brain. The movement is processed in a different part of the brain. All the brain divides up the function. And then what it does is it combines it all in what's called the visual association cortex. The whole picture comes back together. But the interesting thing that happens is that event was also passed through the limbic system. And the limbic system thus picks out the important pieces of that event that should be emphasized, that the person should pay attention to. And so sometimes what happens is because this anger, this fear and all was so emphasized in this particular case, the color red was overemphasized, and the person remembers his boss's face getting bright red when that maybe really never happened. So it causes false memories and things as a result of this. So we filter what we see through our emotions, and actually what we see may be slightly different from what actually happened. Now, that's important to dreaming because when we dream, again, this is the part of the brain that turns on. The limbic system is processing emotional events of the day, and the dreams thus tend to focus, in this particular case, with how do I deal with this unresolved conflict, this unresolved threat to myself, not only to me, but the real threat to my livelihood, but a blow to my ego. So that's the dream is sitting there trying to sort all that out. But what happens is episodic memory, the thing that allows you to remember the exact episode, is offline. It's inactive. So the actual event that created the dream disappears. You ever wonder why? If dreams are about some something that happened the other day, why is it it just doesn't come out and show me what was going on? Well, that's why. That part of the brain's gone, or asleep. So the actual episode's not there, but what is left is all the emotions, all the threats, all the emotions, all they could be positive things too, all the elation, things that happen to you that, during that day. That's what's being processed in this part of the brain and being stored as memories. Okay? Because you already stored the event as a memory while you were awake, but this emotional stuff is now being stored. So what happens now is that when that part of the brain starts acting and bringing attention to what's important for the mind to look at, it no longer has an external event to reference to. There is no vision that's being reconstructed. All the information is coming from within that's reconstructing your dream, and that information is coming from this part of the brain that's doing the emotional processing of things, the unfinished business, as Jung said, during the day. So, for example, and those parts of the brain that are active process things by association. They associate things with the emotional information they have coming in. So, for example, this damaged career might show up in this person's dream as a damaged boat. The color, the fear, and the unknown that he was dealing with might show up or be processed or associated with the color black by the color processing center in his brain. The motion processing center of the brain is also active. That allows you to think you're moving through the dream. You know, you feel you're moving through the dream just like you're moving through life. In this case, the emotions that stimulated that are this turmoil. So perhaps that part of the brain shows motion as being a turmoil on the waters. And then finally, the right inferior parietal cortex, which brings all these images together into space, in a dream space, pastes all these various images together into a scene. So here we have a picture of a guy, and in the actual dream, he was in a dark, totally black tunnel. He was in a black tunnel on the waters, being pulled through the waters in this damaged boat. So the dream basically pastes together these individual little images into a dream sentence. Okay, so dreams paste together images like we paste together words when we talk in waking life. So it's really a message. There's a whole dream sentence here, but it's pasted together with images. So you can see how even though our most bizarre dreams can seem very bizarre, everything that went into them made perfectly logical sense. There were perfectly logical associations with what the dream was trying to deal with. Okay, the other thing that occurs is that the left part of the brain is largely inactive, and that part's responsible for speech and naming things and talking in words. That doesn't happen in dreams, although you'll see words and things in dreams are usually associated with other things. So what occurs here is the dreams talk in metaphors. The things you see in your dreams are not what they mean in waking life. They are metaphors or associations for things that are going on inside your head, things that are being processed, things that are trying to be understood by the dream. So in this case, the metaphor of the boat, why a boat? Okay? Because it represented or was a metaphor to this dreamer of his career, which kept him afloat. Okay? It was just a metaphor that was picked by the mind. Now, the other thing is rational thinking is offline. It's asleep, too. So this allows these coherent but often bizarre sorts of dreams to take place and be seen perfectly natural while you're in the dream. Now, so let's go back to the dream itself and understand now with the knowledge of how the brain works, how do we decode God's forgotten language? One of the ways I like to look at decoding the dream is letting the dream speak. Let the information come out of the dream itself. And then compare what that dream says to your waking life situation. Because if the dream is truly working on unfinished business of the day, as Jung said, there's got to be some sort of relationship there. There's a number of very many approaches to doing this. There's three that I'll mention here. First is metaphor, and this is where the Hayden projective approach and what Jeremy teaches and is derived based on Ullman's original technique is very handy because as we get together in our dream groups, basically what we're looking at is the metaphor in the dream. And how phrases in the dream narrative sound like events in your life, or how actions in the dream might sound like events in the dreamer's waking life. So as we give suggestions and projections on that dream in the dreamer. We're not only forming metaphors for ourselves, but for the dreamer and helping them through suggested metaphors. The second is associations. And there's a number of techniques for dealing with associations. I won't go through them all here because I wanted to get to one that I think is even more important. But a couple of ways I like to look at how the dream image associates with what's going on in your life is to just ask, what is the function of the image? What's its purpose? And sometimes the association will come out quickly. Or if it's a person you know in the dream, what's their personality like? But there's a number of techniques for dealing with associations, so I won't go into them here. The one that I think is important, and I'll be talking about here, is looking for emotional associations with the dream. And to do that, what we're looking for is, how does it feel to be that thing in the dream? And how is it like the feelings in your waking life? So I use a little approach called, it's a role play technique from Gestalt Therapy, which is where I had my training. It's better known here as the six magic questions. But actually, to imagine yourself as the thing in the dream, or imagine how that dream would say it felt in the dream, will bring up the feelings that originally created the image. And also, there's a technique for working with color that brings up emotional associations. I'll give you some examples of how these three characteristics kind of fit in. Dreams are rarely literal. They generally speak in metaphor and association. Here's a very interesting case of that. In this dream, this dreamer says, I was in a clinic and a nurse was checking me over. She felt some lumps in my groin area and exclaimed, she is riddled with cancer. I was not afraid to die, but I asked her if she could give me something to keep me from going through all the pain. So the question is, what would you do if you had that dream? You go to the doctor, right? Very quickly. Which she did, but she was totally clean, bill of health. So she comes back and says, why is this dream telling me I have cancer? Well, we looked at the associations and metaphors. We found out that this person related all of her relationships in terms of astrology. And her boyfriend was a cancer. Okay? And she is riddled with cancer, was basically saying she's puzzled over how to deal with her boyfriend who's a cancer. I was not afraid to die, et cetera, was related to, I'm not afraid to end this relationship, but wish I could do something to keep me through going through all the emotional pain of doing so. So one should always, I mean, if you get a dream like that, it's a good idea to have a checkup. But it's always good to look for the metaphor and associations in the dream itself. Also, dream imagery associations are really your personal associations, not something you can necessarily get out of a dream dictionary. And here's an example of this. Everybody quickly look at this and tell me, what is it? It's a door, right? You got that answer right. Okay, what do you feel its purpose or function is? To open?
Lock me out.
Let me in. Anybody else? Okay. Go to the bathroom. Go out, okay. It's just men on it. It's really women. Now, one of the interesting thing that occurs here is, let me go back a second, is that as many people as there are in this room, you'll have a slightly different answer to what that function is, which is we have a slightly different association to the same blasted thing, the same door. And just the same way it works in your dreams. The things you see in your dreams are your associations. So that's why when we use Hayden's projective approach, we follow very strict rules that if it were my dream, because we're basically saying that this is my projection, my association, and hopefully maybe it will trigger something in the dreamer as well. But for me, it's my association. It's also why dream dictionaries aren't too effective, because they're talking about the author's associations. Okay, now associations are revealed if we let the dream speak. And this is an approach I like to use, where we allow the images in the dream to basically speak and tell us how they feel. When I asked this dreamer, if he were the fella in the boat, how would he feel? He says, I feel I'm headed for disaster. I need someone to save me. I asked him, what would the rock feel if it was in the water there? And he says, I feel I must hold on tight, or I will be washed away. I said, okay, how does the boat feel? I was once a great vessel, and now I've been destroyed. I fear I will be unable to keep afloat.
Now, these are feelings expressed by things in the dream, but don't those sound like feelings that this guy may be going through, right? Okay. So basically, it supports the idea that all the things in your dreams relate to ways you feel about the situation that the dream is working on. And so it makes it a handy way to quickly get to the associations. Just ask how that thing would feel. Now, I'll be using a technique in the workshops that you go to today. If you go to mine or if I'm in your dream group, or if you just pick up the handout, called the 6 magic questions. Nothing magic about them. Somebody called it that here and it sort of caught on. But basically what you do is you pick one of the dream images that seems important to you, that draws you to it. And in this case, the dreamer picked the wheel. I asked him, you know, what seemed important and unusual to you. He says the wheel. And you become that image and let it speak and answer these 6 questions. I am, my purpose is, I like, what I dislike, what I fear, and what I desire. They're just questions that I found in Gestalt work that seem to target the real issues that you need to work on without going too deep. It allows sort of everybody to understand them and then work with them. And what he answered was, I am a wheel that no one is using. My purpose is to set the direction. I like my ability to direct the course. What I dislike is no one's using me. What I fear is no one will recognize my value and I will be destroyed. What I desire is that someone realizes my importance and uses me. So this is not a wheel talking. This is a man talking about his problems with his career being destroyed and the new management coming in, not recognizing him, as you can see. Okay. So by doing this approach, you will get to some of the core issues that the dream is dealing with. And then the next step is to look at that as if it's you speaking about your own dream. And in this case, I asked him to relate to life, and he says, I'm a big wheel in this company, that's how it relates metaphorically, that no one is using. I have a superior ability to direct the course of our division, but I fear no one in the new management values my capabilities. It's all over for my career. I am at their mercy. So what is the dream revealing to us at this point? Well, dreams tend, as Jung said, they tend to bring up our fears and misconceptions, things that feed the shadow side of the self, the shadow fears. As Bob Hayden indicated the first day, the power of the beast, essentially, is brought up in the dream. And in this case, the fears and misconceptions that the dreamer had were stated when he related it to his waking life. He says, I feel no one in new management values my capabilities. Probably not necessarily true, but it seemed like it to him. And it's all over for my career. I am at their mercy. Again, a possible misconception. Is there nothing this fella could do? Okay. So, now, that's one stage of working with associations and dreams. I'll talk a little bit about color and working with our associations there. I'll give you a little lesson in dream color. Remember our door? Remember the function you had? Look at this for a second, and the first thing that comes to your mind, tell me what is the purpose of this door? Did anyone find that their purpose or function changed from the first test? So what are some of the changes? Invite me in. Okay, very good. Thank you. Anybody else got something similar happen? Yes. Office door. Okay. So now what happened here? Same door, just the color changed. So the lesson here is that basically color alters the meaning of the imagery we see. And this is what happens in our dreams. If we work on just the dream image without the color, we get half the message, right? In fact, the message completely switched as soon as we added the color. So if you can remember the color in your dreams, it's good to work with the color in your dreams at the same time you work with the imagery. The technique I like to use is we work with the image to understand the emotions and whatever thoughts and feelings are behind developing the image in the dream, and then we work with the color, and also that adds to it and helps modify it. Okay, now do we all dream in color? Well, research shows that anywhere from 97% to 100% of our dreams are in color. They do this by waking a person up in the lab right during the dream cycle. We go through 5 or 6 dream cycles a night, each about a half hour long, called REM periods. And they wake people up right in the dream period. They ask them, did you dream in color? Did you have any color? Can you remember any color in your dreams? And, you know, 90 to 100% of the people say yes and can report color in their dreams. So it's pretty well known that we do dream in color. The problem is in the morning when we wake up. The problem is recall.
just like recall of dreams. Four times more responded that their dreams were colorless when they were asked later than when they were asked immediately. And some of my research with the database at USCS showed that only 40% of the dreams that were actually written down and put into the database had color in them. So we tend to forget the colors. So it's something that if it's not important to the dream, if the emotion contained in the color is not important to the dream, it's or to us, that is, it's always important to the dream, but if it's not important to us, to the ego perhaps, it may not be remembered. And the other thing about the brain, remember episodic memory that's shut off? That's why you don't remember your dreams. Your brain is really not designed to remember your dreams, oddly enough. And for those of us who are, so if you don't remember your dreams a lot, don't worry, you're pretty normal. Your brain's working right. But many of us are lucky enough as we wake that part of the memory kicks in and allows us then to remember the trace of the dream and bring it back into full memory. I did some research also on what colors we dream of. And here's the results. The vast majority of people, in fact, everyone in two, I did two samples of this. This was 16,000 dreams or 15,000 dreams. I did another sample of 8,000. And it came out exactly the same. The top colors that people dream of are black and white. Not colorless, but black and white in their dreams. And about the equal amount. The next top colors were the quaternary, or what's called the psychological primaries of red, yellow, green, and blue. And Jung considered these groups important, which is kind of interesting. Again, here we have science supporting Jung. And he knew nothing about this research because I just did it. Jung indicated that black and white is one of the most common dualities in dreams that show up, and it represents the integration of the conscious and unconscious. You would think if that's what dreams are trying to do, integrating the conscious, unconscious, those would be the two colors that show up most, and by golly, there they are. The next, he said, was red, yellow, and blue, and green. They were called the psychological primaries. And he indicated that was a sign of completion in the dream when those four colors appeared dominant in a person's dream. And again, he knew nothing about the research, but by golly, it supports his theories. You would think that if the dream is trying to bring about a sense of completion, that those four colors would show up a lot, and they do. Give you some ideas of how they might show up in a dream. In this case, I dreamed of swirling clouds of black and white patterns. Suddenly a golden light shone within the clouds and a golden city appeared and filled with a sense of hope. So you can see the swirling black and white, the integration of the conscious and unconscious with some sort of hopeful result coming out of it. Here's a dream that showed the four colors of completion and renewal. So that I dreamed I was leaving a very large college I attended. A woman was stuffing all kinds of colorful red, yellow, blue, and green fabrics into my bag. There's your four colors. I opened the door, to my surprise, saw the hallway and the rooms empty and workmen beginning to paint everything white. I felt like it was the ending of something and the beginning of some new life. So the dream interpreted itself and showed the four colors, of course, as this completion phase and the white as the renewal phase. Okay. Look at this color for a second. How does it make you feel? Warm? Happy? Energy? Excited? Okay, great. How about this one? Calm. Okay. Peaceful. Okay. Very good. Well, the interesting thing is happening. Even though, now I asked you how it made you feel, not what it reminded you of, too. So remember that, because it's important. But when we look at color, what happens here, our whole physical body, not the whole body, but the nervous system, it's called the autonomic nervous system, responds to that color in the unconscious. For instance, if I had instrumented you at that point in time, we would see that your blood pressure increased, your heart rate increased slightly as you saw the red. It's just something that happened automatically. The body responded to it. Likewise with the blue, heart rate and blood pressure and respiration would slightly decrease. So whereas in dreams, color can, in dreams and in life, color can stimulate many associations, it is this physical association with color, this unconscious association with color that tends to be what I have found to be the important association for dreams. It's how it makes you feel, not what it makes you think of. So when we see color in our dreams,
quite often we will look at it from, what does it remind me of? That's a conscious thing. That's a thinking question. What's it remind me of? So we may get associations for blue, oh, it reminds me of the ocean, or green reminds me of my mother's favorite dress. You'll get a lot of cultural symbols. When I asked in my workshop last night, what does red make you think of? I got stop signs, stop lights, green, I get money, things of that sort. So you get a lot of cultural symbology and associations. Many responses are learned. Many of us study the chakra systems, aura healing, things of that sort, and many authors have associated colors with various chakras. Now, if you really truly studied chakras, you'll find that all over the world the associations are different for color. So there are different associations, but these are learned associations. So you might say, the red means something that it normally means because you've learned it means it. That's when you ask what it reminds you of. Okay. Same thing with metaphors. Sometimes blue can relate to, I feel blue, metaphors, things of that sort. But what I found with my research is that it's the feelings that seem to dominate dream associations. And this is, once again, because of this interesting little part of the brain called the limbic system. When we see color, just like you did here, when you saw the red, it registered not only in your visual cortex, but in this little center of the brain that processes color. And it also registered on your limbic system. Your limbic system said, I'm going to attach an emotional association to that color. And that's what you spoke, the emotional association of how you felt with that color. Well, when we dream at night, of course, the color's not there, but the dream is working on, if the dream starts working on the same emotions that you just spoke in one way or another, it's going to produce an association of that color. So it creates the color based on the emotion. So as Reader's Digest said, color paints our dreams with emotion. Now, the Reader's Digest did a whole article on my research on color, and that was a quote they said. But I just wanted to show you a little bit about what went into some of the research. We're running out of time, so I can't go very quickly. But there's a whole field of color psychology that has attributed common associations, common human associations with color. And this just shows you some of this. We'll go into this further in Color Workshop, and it can be found also, I think I've got it on my website, dreamscience.org, and in my book for those of you who might have bought it. But basically, the field of color psychology determined what sort of emotions certain colors typically tend to create. And these are the subliminal emotions, the things that are occurring inside. And what they use this for, of course, is packaging, so that they can package things in colors that attract you to them unconsciously. Okay? So if you understand what those unconscious associations are with color, in this case, look at the red. It says warmer. Okay? Remember when I put up red, everybody said warmer. And blue, cooler. That just shows we're all human. We have these same associations. And also there is a spectrum of black to white, which tends to relate to awareness, as one might suspect. I wish I had more time to go into this. I don't. But what I did with my research is I took the research on the subliminal associations with color, and I turned the associations into emotional statements so that you could use, I could use them for my research, but so I found it's a really good tool to use also for dream work, because if I dream of a color red, okay, and I look at the various statements that are some of the common emotional associations with color, one or two of them might pop out, might give me an aha. Just like when we were in our dream work, so we do, if it were my dream. So this is if it were my color. Okay, these are not the meanings of color, so please don't use it as a color dictionary. It really isn't. What they are is statements that are intended to bring about your own associations. If it were my color, use it that way. Okay. It comes in very handy that way, not only for working with research, but working with dreams. I've also did some studies, I wish I could get further into this, that showed that color relates to waking life emotion. We took a person who was a professor at one of the colleges, and he didn't necessarily believe in this approach, and he says, I challenge you to find in my 11 years of dreams where I had this emotional crisis. Well, net, after we did the color work, and we profiled his every year I profiled his emotional state that year based on purely on the colors in his dreams. We not only found the year that he had the emotional crisis, but a second one he didn't want to tell me about. Okay.
So all that really goes to show is that if dream color has anything to do with emotions, it's obviously going to reflect what's going on in your waking life, right? And it does. Okay, so working with color, what one does is basically pick a colored image that draws your interest. In this case, it's black walls, green trees. The easiest thing to do is just ask yourself how you feel in the presence of that color. But if that doesn't bring forth anything, then you might look at the color questionnaire and look if there's a statement on there that somehow resonates with you. In this case, it was, I have dealt with an unacceptable blow. Nothing is as it should be. And the same thing occurred with the green. He said, I need to establish myself, my self-esteem, my independence. I want recognition. I need to increase the certainty of my own value, etc. So you can see those are also statements about the situation the dream was dealing with. And in this particular case, one of the statements that was important was, I need management to acknowledge my value. Again, a misconception that this man was totally helpless. Now, the last part of the process is looking for, once again, guidance in this process. And Jung said that the dream brings up our misconceptions and then guides us through them. So one thing you can do is, after working with color and the imagery work, is look for what the misconceptions are that have come out of the dream work. Where is the shadow that has peered up through your dream work? In this case, it was all over for good. I'm at their mercy, and I need them to acknowledge my value. So, again, is there evidence of guiding wisdom in this dream? There are three different ways of looking for where the guidance is in your dream that I have found. The first is an element of surprise. The second is pure guidance, the words, something, or somebody pointing down. The third is a positive ending. Now, in this case, there was the words, there is no one at the wheel. The surprise here was when the dreamer looked down and realized there really isn't anybody controlling the direction of the boat. The guidance, of course, was the thought. As he got a thought in his mind, as this entity behind him said, there's no one at the wheel, the thought was, why don't you take charge and steer the boat? Okay, so he got this sense of guidance in the dream, and the last was a positive ending. What happened in the dream is, at the moment the dreamer took the wheel, the boat emerged from this cave, this dark cave he was in. It converted to a white ice cave into this beautiful land. So what the dream was really doing here was not only showing him the misconceptions, suggesting a direction, you know, the God within, suggesting the direction, but showing him what would happen if he took that direction. Now, in order to really actualize this, nothing's going to happen if you wake up from the dream and go, ooh, that was neat. So you got to get real Dr. Phil-like, I say. You have to set a course, okay? So for this, first step is relating the guidance to a waking life solution. And his relationship with that was taking charge of my own life, recognizing his own inherent values. And if he does that, he will emerge from the situation in a better place. So he got the message. Now the question is, Dr. Phil says, you don't go off on the stage until you figure out how to do that. Okay, so the first thing is, was this practical and healthy? You always have to check that out. And in this case, it was practical and healthy. So with Dr. Hill's guidance here, what's the next step? So we made him take the next step. He says, to take charge, I'm going to make some calls. I know that people really like me out there. I'm going to get my resume out. I'm not going to depend on this management to tell me where I'm going with my career. You know, they're not going to place me. I can market myself. And the net-net result of this is the fella did, and he ended up extremely successful in a much better job with much higher pay, okay, due to God's guidance. But as Larry Mays once said, this used to have a Jungian title to it, but Larry said it better than Jung the other day in his seminar, I think, on chess. He said, dreams seldom tell us what to do. They give us the opportunity for the ego to accept the shadow stuff into the conscious personality. Notice the dream didn't say, grab the wheel. It suggested. It gave the opportunity for the ego to grab the wheel and do something with it. And this dream, his real dream, really suggested this concept totally. This woman said she had a recurrent dream for years that she was being pursued by a monster lurking in the darkness. She said, one night I was trapped up against a wall. I turned around and faced the monster and said, "What are you going to do to me?" And the monster replied, "I don't know, lady, it's your dream."
Okay, thank you.